You're listening to a podcast of Spurious Morality. Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Morality. I'm Johnston, and with me this week again I have Mansour. Hello.
Hello.
And we're continuing to look at each new episode of Doctor Who on its week of release. So this week is Lux, second episode of season... Oh, we're back to seasons, aren't we? It's season two. And I, straight off the bat, I liked this one. I thought it was a really good episode. I felt as though we were finally seeing the Disney money on screen. You know, all of this, you know, it's the production budget is so much higher now and that sort of thing. This one was visually fantastic, which we will discuss a little bit more in a bit. But I thought it was just a nice sort of, started off as a good old-fashioned Doctor Who mystery, Doctor and Companion land somewhere, there's something weird going on, let's investigate it. And it sort of turned into a spiritual sequel to The Devil's Chord, similar thing. Very, very similar villain, and it's all sort of building towards some kind of resolution with the Pantheon, I guess. So, yeah, awful lot of fun, this one. Some really good performances, it looked great, and I really do like how the Doctor and Belinda work together. I do think they're a really good pairing. So your sort of general thoughts on the episode, Mansour, go ahead.
I like this one, and a lot of parallels with The Devil's Chord. And so when that clip came out ahead of time of them getting dressed and heading out of the TARDIS, it seemed a bit odd that Belinda would go from being so confrontational and questioning to just having fun. And there is still a bit of a gear shift, but I like the way that was part of the episode, that they were having conversations right the way through about like coming to trust him, and that wasn't completely dropped. So yeah, really enjoying like their dynamic, and also the fact that Belinda's character has got some continuity and coherence from the last episode.
Yeah, I quite liked sort of how that uncertainty from Belinda continued through to this. You know, it would be very easy to kind of set something like that up and then drop it and we never hear from it again. And, you know, stuff like that has happened in the past. Remember when Rose was unhappy about Mickey joining the TARDIS at the end of school reunion, and that seemed to never, ever go anywhere ever again.
Well, there's a bit of a time jump with that, wasn't there? But on screen, we didn't see that.
There just wasn't. In fact, there wasn't a time jump, was there? Because didn't Mickey say something about, oh, great, it's a spaceship at the start of Girl in the Fireplace?
Unless they'd never landed on Earth.
Yeah, so, I think there's something like, I get my spaceship on a first go or something like that.
It's before Boomtown, isn't it? Like, their dynamic is like...
Yes.
Sort of completely changed at that point.
Yeah. The point being, you know, stuff like this does get introduced and then very swiftly dropped.
Yeah.
Think Nyssa and the destruction of Traken as well. That seems to go away pretty damn quickly. So all this sort of thing.
That was a big thing. Around that same time, Tegan having her aunt horrifically killed, and it not being mentioned that much. Or Adric dying. Like, you get an episode or two, and then it's just forgotten.
And despite Tegan wanting to go home, that part of it's never really mentioned again. It's literally just, no, I want to go to work. So yes, we've not got that, which is a good thing. It feels like this friendship is earned and being developed and all that kind of thing. And I think it's kind of a little thing to want, but it's definitely something that I do want and something that I do think's working here. And the flip side is it didn't sort of dominate the episode either. You know, it could very easily have gone on a bit too long, been a little bit too heavy-handed and all that kind of thing, and kind of got in the way of telling a story. But there's such a good story with such a good villain to be told here that I think we've actually got quite a good balance. So yeah, it's really, really good to see these characters developing. And there were a few little things in there that maybe we could have spent a bit more time on, but then we don't need the whole usual checklist of new companion things. We had a new companion last season, and we did, you know, in the last couple of years, we've explained regeneration, we've explained Bigger on the Inside, we've all of the usual, you know, this is psychic paper, this is the sonic screwdriver. That reintroducing the viewer to all these concepts while introducing a new companion, we don't really need that. But at the same time, there was just a reference to bi-generation for, I feel as though it was more the audience's benefit than Belinda's, because there was no real context given to Belinda. You know, she probably walked away from that going, well, what the hell's he on about? But it makes his hand better and he glows a bit. So, okay, carry on.
And I thought that was a little bit odd that he would have used up that reserve of energy on his head. And maybe he was hiding how much pain he was in, but it didn't seem like the sort of critical injury that you would use that for.
It's not quite having a hand chopped off, is it?
No.
But, you know, the rules between healing and regeneration energy and have always been slightly inconsistent, and bi-generation is a different thing. So I guess, yeah, I can let it slide. It's not harming the episode for me. I think that while some little bits were a bit clumsy and maybe a bit rushed, I do like the dynamic between the Doctor and Belinda, and I like where it's going. I like that she does trust him more now than she did last week. But it took an adventure to kind of get through that. And I just hope things do develop. Like, you know, next week, I hope there is something else. I hope there's something that makes her doubt the Doctor a little bit more, or makes her want to get home a bit more, or just something to move it forward. It would be a real shame to have all of that fantastic setup in Robot Revolution, kind of its low-key but still effective continuation in looks. It would be a shame to just kind of go, right, the friends now and they're carrying on as normal and that's that. Yeah. Obviously, getting a home is part of the series storyline, but I still want to see the actual characters developing and that kind of thing happening.
Yeah, and we've only got like a limited number of episodes to do that. We've had two already, there's six left, and two of those are going to be taken up with the finale, where there's probably going to be a lot going on. So, yeah, that's one of my hopes, that in those four episodes in the middle, there's enough to fit in some good development with Belinda, who, like, I really like how different the relationship is to Ruby's, and it's sort of paralleling Rose and then Martha a little bit, but I think it's more interesting than the relationship between the 10th Doctor and Martha, where that was kind of just like one note of it being a bit of an imbalanced relationship and the Doctor actually not treating her particularly well because he was just talking about Rose and focusing on Rose. We don't have any of that here with him going on about Ruby to Belinda. And I think the Belinda and the 15th Doctor's relationship has got so many more layers to it, which is, like I said last week, one of my favourite bits of Robot Revolution, that scene at the end.
It's it's going to be interesting to see how Belinda and Ruby and the Doctor kind of, you know, we know that all three characters are going to be together further on in the season. So it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of mesh, I guess. And I mean, I still don't quite know what's happening with Ruby. Is she coming back sort of working for UNIT now, Mel style, going to be in a few episodes, or is she kind of rejoining the TARDIS further along in this series? Like, it's all been a little bit, not inconsistent, but it's not been particular. Any press releases, that kind of thing, haven't been particularly forthcoming. You know, when Belinda was first announced, it was very much, we're going to have two companions in the TARDIS with the Doctor, which kind of implies that Ruby's travelling again. But she's not in the trailer all that much. And from what I can gather, she does just seem to be popping up with UNIT. So I don't quite know where that's going.
I mean, given like how much of a meal was made of them saying goodbye at the end of season one, I'd be really surprised if she's back travelling full time for more than maybe an episode or two. But maybe what they mean is she is there for the finale, or, you know, the last couple of episodes, in the same way that Mel was travelling with them at the end of season one.
Or the same way that Martha came back in series four.
Yeah, Martha is what I assumed the model would be. Like, they are popping back, yeah. And occasionally there might be a trip or two that they come along on. But
it was just the wording of that press release. You know, the Doctor's going to have two companions travelling with him in the TARDIS. And it even said something like, for the first ever time, because all of fandom went, what are you on about? Like, okay, you know, I'm happy to not count Amy and Rory. They're a married couple, I suppose. If you squint, that doesn't count. But we still had two companions in the TARDIS for Flux, and we had two companions in the TARDIS when Martha came back in series four. And so, yeah, don't know. But if Ruby is sort of back travelling with them for the second half of the series or whatever, I do hope that there's still some sort of questioning and conflict between the Doctor and Belinda. I hope it doesn't just all smooth out because Ruby's there now and they're just three best mates kind of thing, because that's not how Belinda has been set up, and it wouldn't be fair on the character to just kind of smooth everything over because we've got another friend there now as well, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And what the relationship between Ruby and Belinda might be like.
Yes, that's always worth, because Ruby was always the sort of very enthusiastic, yes, I'd love to travel, really enjoying this. And I mean, I still don't think her sort of exit was properly earned. I don't think
it's just enough time to, like, yeah, because we had two seasons of Rose when she first left, and that had, and two long seasons, and Ruby we had like one short season. I think that was just, yeah, a major factor. Like, we just didn't have enough time to be invested enough to care when they're split apart. And it wasn't like them being ripped apart by a dimensional wall. It was, she's spending some time with her family. It's not like he's never going to see her again.
Yeah, I kind of wish it had have ended on a more, I'm just dropping you off for a bit, I'll see you later kind of way. Because we knew she was coming back. We knew she was going to be in this second series, even at the time. So, yeah, I don't know. It just, the way it was handled felt a bit funny, and I hope that whatever we're getting with Ruby later on in this series is just sort of handled a little bit better. And, you know, if the end of the series is time for Ruby, Belinda, whoever to go, I hope it's a proper goodbye and not just a, oh, well, we found your mum, mystery solved, off you pop. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But, and of course, Ruby's reappearance could tie in to Mrs. Flood quite well as well, because obviously, you know, Ruby knew Mrs. Flood lived was it next door, a few doors down, whatever from it, that kind of thing.
Same street.
Definitely. Yeah, so there's more to be done there, I think. More to be kind of picked up on. So, back to Lux. This episode, the thing that struck me the most was how fantastic it looked. Like, it set out from the start to be a very visual episode. You know, it's an episode that deals with the God of Light from the Pantheon. So, we've had the God of Music in The Devil's Court, the Maestro, and that was very, very music-focused. That was an episode that had to sound great, and it did. But we don't necessarily equate how good an episode sounds with the cost of that episode, the budget of that episode. And the one thing that I've seen mentioned a lot about Lux is it finally feels like we're seeing that Disney money on the screen. And it certainly can't have been a cheap episode to produce. Not only do we have to recreate the 1950s, and it looked good. It looked very, very good. You know, definitely sort of in the vein of Back to the Future and that kind of thing, recreating that era. They did a good job. It was believable. But we've also got this sort of very visually impressive villain. I believe that Lux was actually animated, like hand-drawn, if what I've sort of read briefly on Instagram is true, if I've interpreted it correctly, they've sort of traditionally animated it, and it's not just another CGI creation, which is brilliant. It's just what you'd want. But we also had this fantastic sequence of the Doctor and Belinda being animated, and we had sort of all the great stuff of them breaking through the screen. And yeah, it was a very visually impressive episode. And I'm not sure it is fair to say this is the first time that Disney money's believably been visible on the screen. I think maybe it's the best it's been showed off. Yeah, it's just sort of an interesting point. Is there anything you want to sort of add to that at all?
I mean, I agree, it looked really good, but I felt like there were, like right from the Star Beast, I think there's been like just impressive visuals and like really careful blending of physical and CGI effects, with like doing as much as they can practically and then enhancing it. And so Star Beast, else, like the church on Ruby Road, like it didn't strike me like, oh, this is the first time you're seeing that, you know, that Disney money. But that it did stand out in terms of like just creatively what they were doing in this episode, and the attention to detail again with the adding like little bits of grain to Mr. Ring-a-Ding, and like the animation of that main character, I think was really, really good. I think the animation and also the vocal performance are the things that made that work for me with Alan Cummings.
This whole Disney money needs to appear on screen thing from day one has kind of, I mean, I've not quite got it, because at the end of the day, yeah, you know, on Disney Plus, there are some very, very visually fantastic and impressive series. You know, it cannot be denied that a lot of the Marvel stuff looks very good. A lot of the Star Wars stuff looks absolutely fantastic. But I think people are underestimating how much it actually takes to produce something that looks all right on screen now. I've seen sort of calls for, oh, Doctor Who needs to go back to its, you know, low budget roots. And it's like, well, the TV's not made like that anymore. Like, there's no modern equivalent to making something look good on a shoestring, like, I don't know, Planet of Evil or Talons or something like that. That just doesn't exist anymore. It's not a thing. Go on.
I was just going to say, look, it's sort of sitting in the middle, in that you have these things like Star Wars and Marvel, and if my understanding is right, like Doctor Who's budget is nowhere near like those big franchises. So they are still like relative to those biggest things that are out there, like getting like less money, and they are still having to think about how to do things creatively and make most of what they have.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it, though. It Disney isn't just handing out the same amount of money to absolutely everything it produces. It's a well-known fact that Doctor Who has consistently made more money than anything else for the BBC pretty much since it came back. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that's ever properly rivaled it in terms of revenue. You know, maybe Top Gear when Clarks and Hammond and May were still on it, that kind of thing. But there's
no merchandise. Just nothing else. Like, you know, Strictly Come Dancing, EastEnders, Top Gear, there's not going to be the amount of, well, maybe Top Gear has the international audience, but you're not going to have as many, like, you know, books, DVDs, toys connected to those shows.
Strictly has the stage shows, I guess. Or the tours and that kind of thing. I don't know. But like Doctor Who's in a very unique position where it's very, very marketable. Every week there is something new that you can create merchandise from. Like I've just seen, literally before starting to record this podcast, a Mr. Dingling pin badge. And this, you know, we're recording this on Monday. The episode first went out on Saturday. It's not taken long for that to be available for pre-order. So there's the merchandise with Doctor Who's just insane. You know, look at some of the figures and sets and that kind of thing that we've had. Like, personally, I don't really go for them, collect them. But, like, you can get a Vord action figure, which I still find completely insane.
Having said that, there's like something I heard today, which is for the next year, there's very little that's been announced in terms of upcoming merchandise, like even less than like last few years, which might be, again, like part of that sort of theory that things there is going to be a gap or a bit of a lull at least.
But it, like the merchandise carried on in the wilderness years. We had regular book ranges. We had, you know, audios towards the end of it. Big Finish isn't going anywhere. We know they've got the license for another 5 years. I don't know. Like, Doctor Who does seem to make a lot of money, and it's still got to work within reason, though. Like, it doesn't make as much money as the MCU or a Star Wars, and therefore it's not going to have that level of money sunk into it. I do think that we couldn't have had Lux done as well previously in any other era. Maybe that's the sign of the Disney money on screen, I don't know. But like, can you imagine them trying to produce Lux in, I don't know, David Tennant's first?
I think the animation is
anything like that.
I could see, like, because there were like period stories, I could see a version of it, but I think it's the animation that would be the weakest link if it was done in previous eras.
I'm thinking sort of look at something like, I don't know, something like the Lazarus Experiment, for example. Like that's not an episode that's aged particularly well. Sort of nearly 20 years later, or 18 years later, it doesn't look particularly amazing. Whereas I think this will still look good in 15, 20 years' time, which would be interesting to see.
I think it will. And although like Lazarus, I think Doctor Who, even going back into the classic series, has always been good with like the setting for period stories, like costumes and sets and things. With the Lazarus Experiment, it's when you have that monster on top of it can be, you know, more challenging to get right.
Oh, I think that monster is just, it's there with the giant rat from Talons or the magma beast or you know, anything else that always gets wheeled out as why does Doctor Who look dreadful? I mean, it's not quite murker bad, but, you know, it's we're judging a 20-year-old piece of CGI that did not have this amount of cash spent on it, whereas Mr. Ingling did look fantastic. So it's, yeah, it works. I like it. I'd like sort of the fact that, you know, we are Doctor Who is achieving things visually that it hasn't been able to before, but I think it's doing it at a level that it can do and a level that it can sustain. I don't think it's going to fly off into looking like Star Wars anytime soon, and nor should it either.
Well, the main thing is it's doing it. It's making the most of what it has, but still having some weirdness and creativity. It's not just like creating a spectacle for the sake of it. It's serving the story and it's doing it in interesting ways with an interesting performance behind it.
Yeah, and it's lots of things made looks work well. I think that just on a because of the concept and because of the idea, it had to be an episode that looked good just to start with. And it did that, and just the fact that we had such a great performance from Alan Cumming, the fact that the Doctor and Belinda are such a brilliant team, the fact that it was able to push sort of crazy concepts like the Doctor and Belinda stepping out of a TV screen and meeting some Doctor Who fans who are, you know, wearing the Telos T-shirt and a scarf and all that sort of thing. I think it was a really great way to just explore some of this sort of slightly bizarre meta stuff that, you know, has been part of the conversation for quite a while. You know, I know that this podcast we've discussed sort of the concept of Doctor Who as a TV programme in universe. I know that that's a theory that Mark's sort of championing quite a bit. And we were obviously sort of bending reality, and we have things like the Toymaker and other Pantheon characters, and yeah, it just, we're able to explore concepts that Doctor Who hasn't really explored before, and that's good. And if that's a budget thing, then fantastic. You know, let's see what we can do that we couldn't previously with that. But also, if it is just an ideas and concept thing, then let's keep playing with that as well and do it the best we can. It seems to be doing quite well at this point. So Lux was a Pantheon character, so we've had quite a bit of the Pantheon now. Toymaker, Sutek, Maestro, and so on. I do wonder, are we still sort of aiming for Pantheon characters to be a big bad? Is there some kind of big leader behind the Pantheon, you know, a god of gods type thing? Is this going somewhere, or are we just going to use it as an excuse to get a load of reality-bending type characters in?
I don't know.
It sort of doesn't quite feel like it's particularly going anywhere, and it feels like as a concept it's getting a bit cheaper every time it's used now, because, you know, the Toymaker was a really, really good choice of villain for the giggle. You know, we've known the Toymaker since early Doctor Who is this sort of big, powerful, omnipotent, reality-bending character. And, you know, the Doctor had to beat the Toymaker at his own game, as has always been established. But now we just seem to have lots of characters that can do weird, visually impressive things, but then be beaten at their own game because there's this set of rules. And ultimately, it's always going to sort of end the same way. Like, I like the idea of, you know, the Doctor's battling slightly higher level villains than usual, but also it's slightly higher level villains than usual that do seem to be getting defeated sort of easily. I'm hoping this Pantheon thing doesn't drag on for too long, because it's going to get fairly samey fairly quickly, I think. I'm enjoying it, don't get me wrong, but I think it has a sell-by date.
That's the danger of having, like, threats that are built up so much and then having to resolve that in 45 minutes. And even in the two-part finale, last year, it's going to have to be wrapped up in what risks seeming like too easy in a way. Like this week, I liked the resolution and the way it played out, but to an extent, the Doctor and Belinda didn't do loads to... Because if I'm following it right, Lux chose to go out into the open, and that's what defeated them, just being absorbed into the universe. So maybe the Doctor and Belinda hurried that process along by giving him the regeneration energy and letting him out. But I could see that playing out without them turning up. Like, you know, Lux eventually finds his way out of the cinema somehow, some other way, and the same thing happens. But yeah, it is a danger. Like that we're talking about, like the Wilderness Stew's books, and the New Adventures did a lot of stuff with gods and things like that. What I liked about that, and which is like a lot easier to do when you've got the space of a series of, like, you know, 50, 60 novels, there were major consequences for the Doctor, like moral compromises he had to make, losses that he had that were kind of the result of deals made with cosmic entities. So maybe that's the thing, like, however things get wrapped up at the end of this season, for there to be some consequence or some impact, so it's not just all done and forgotten about.
Yeah, it's the Doctor does seem to be sort of bumping off a god every 3 weeks at the moment, and it feels fairly consequence-free. I'm aware that all, you know, the pantheon and all of these godlike characters appearing is a consequence of something the Doctor did in Wild Blue Yonder, or at least is hinted to be. But what actually are the consequences? Because, well, more or less everybody lived. I know the caretaker didn't in Lux, but more or less everybody lived. You know, the Giggle didn't have a high body count. Everybody more or less lived in the Sutek two-parter. And I think the only real victim of the Maestro was June Hudson. So it's kind of... These don't feel like big end-of-the-universe-shattering threats, and they should do.
And it doesn't have to be a physical cost, because, like, he wasn't fighting gods, but the way the Tenth Doctor ended up, there was the whole thing about Time Lord Victorious and like the impact on his character of like going too far and hubris and all of that. And yeah, and there was the death in Waters of Mars, which was really impactful. But like there was an arc and an impact from his actions, even though he was winning and beating those monsters in individual episodes. So I want that would be something like that it impacts on the Doctor or someone else in some really significant way.
I think it would perhaps help to have a pantheon focused episode not on Earth. Like, Earth's not going to... I know part of the storyline here is that Earth has been destroyed, or at least has hinted to have been, but that's not going to be a Doctor Who permadeath, is it? That's never going to stick. We've had the Earth be destroyed and come back quite a few times in Doctor Who in the past. Whereas I would quite like to see one of these godlike pantheon characters actually have some kind of apocalyptic effect. You know, let's have them wipe out alien planet number 745 or whatever. Let's actually see the real damage that these characters can do, because everything that we've seen them do so far, more or less, has been reversible on defeat. And defeat has come fairly easily for all of them. So yeah, I kind of want to see the actual impact of these characters. I know we've seen what would happen to Earth if they just left the Maestro to it for 30 years or whatever. But that's not, it's still not hammering home what these characters are capable of. And I think to up the threat, let's see them, I don't know, decimate Androzani or something like that. You get the idea. Something that isn't going to be reversed, something that's going to stick.
Well, that was quite a big contrast with, like, we were talking about Marvel earlier. Like, so in that SUTEK two-parter, you have everyone, like, dusted in a very similar way to the, like, half the population are in Marvel's Infinity War. And yes, those people come back in the next Marvel movie, but it's not consequence-free. Like, those people who'd gone away had lost 5 years, and it's picked up to varying degrees in, like, the shows and movies that come on after that. Whereas in the Doctor Who finale last year, it's like there are far fewer consequences or impacts. It's all just, like, reset pretty much back to normal. So little things like that, like just have some, and I know that that then has that impact on future storytelling because you have to remember those, you know, world changing events that you've set up. And Doctor Who's kind of keeps going through patterns of rolling those things back to reset back to normal. Like, is it season 5 or season 6 where like the cracks were used as an explanation as to why people didn't remember the Daleks or the Cybermen and bits like that. Doctor Who doesn't seem to want to change the status quo of like the real world, which I guess is understandable, but I think it would be interesting if they did play with that a bit more.
I think the other thing about Doctor Who is there's no Bible and there's no established what is canon type thing. And therefore, you know, we can have, I mean, how many times has Gallifrey been destroyed in the expanded universe?
You know, I mean, it's got to be on TV. It's like two or three times on
TV. TV's been a couple of times. And I was reading something earlier, actually, that sort of said, like, it's this time round, it's difficult to believe that the Doctor's the last Time Lord. Like, was nobody not on Gallifrey when it was destroyed by the Master? Because Rassilon was sent off in Hellbent and all that. Like, we have seen Time Lords leave Gallifrey.
Doesn't he talk about Susan in, like, ambiguous terms as well? Like, I'm trying to think back to last year. Like, when he mentions her fleetingly, it's like he's unsure of where she is, not that she was back on Gallifrey and she died.
Yeah. And it there just doesn't seem to be any level of consistency to that. I mean, there's no consistency as to whether Gallifrey's destroyed or not, really, when you take the last 20 years into account. But, yeah, I don't buy that every single Time Lord was on Gallifrey when the Master did what he did. The whole last Time Lord thing just doesn't quite feel as solid this time as it did when the Time War was what had destroyed it up to.
I wonder if, you know, saying like it's a resolution going to be focused on the pantheon, the gods, I wonder if it's going to be bringing together things like Gallifrey, Susan, and this god stuff, like, you know, maybe the ultimate villain is some Time Lord god or gods.
Maybe the real pantheon was the friends we made along the way.
there's so many little things though, like the mentions of Susan, and we might get to the end of season 2 and go, okay, it was just been mentioning her a few times, but it feels like some of these things are set up or are being mentioned just a couple of times too many to just be random lines.
Yeah, the sort of rug pull with it not being Susan last series was a bit strange after how much it had been signposted. It feels like that's something that needs to be continued, and so far it's not really been, but we'll see. It, again, it, you know, this is ongoing. We are dealing with something that is very bit clearly being set up as a multi-series arc. Like, this is at least a two-series arc, and we are at the start of the second series still. We're a quarter of the way into the second series when you consider the episode count. But you get my point.
Yeah, there's a fair bit left. So I kind of am interested or excited about like these big concepts coming in at the end. But then what we were saying earlier, I don't want that to be to the detriment of just having like a solid character arc for Belinda and her story and just telling something more self-contained. I think that should be the priority. And then gods and universe ending events should be the sort of window dressing around that.
Yeah, agreed. It should all be pieces that make up the puzzle, and we shouldn't make just one piece bigger because it's the last week of the series or whatever. Yeah. Okay, other sort of big point from this episode then was the kind of breaking of the fourth wall, the Doctor and Belinda crawling out of TV and meeting three overly stereotypical Doctor Who fans, like I say, scarf to watch the series and Telos t-shirt and all that kind of thing. And I liked this sequence. I thought this sequence worked well for a minute or two. It just felt like it went on a little bit too much. Like it was a nice little cutaway gag, but it then outstayed its welcome. And the, you know, we'd 3, 4, 5 minutes after meeting these characters, we get, oh, they're not real and they're gonna die, and sort of the Doctor trying to force the message to the us of us at home that it's all very sad and these people are an inadvertent creation of everything that's been going on. And and then of course at the end it turns out that they were still there and still aware, and it was all a bit strange. And again, feels like it's another piece in a puzzle. It feels like it's going somewhere. I think it would have worked as a standalone joke had it just sort of gone on for 2 minutes, stopped and gone away. But the whole conversation about the actual existence of these characters and that kind of thing muddied things a little bit. I did like the references. I like the fact that they all thought Blink was the best thing ever, and the Doctor kind of turning around going, yeah, but what about the one with the goblins or the one where I was on the landmine? That was good. And that was fun. That was a laugh. And, you know, nice nod to Blink, which is still beloved. But yeah, I thought it was quite a good little sequence. I thought it was okay. I just thought it outstayed its welcome. But the fact it outstays its welcome makes me think that maybe there's more to it and that we may get a bit more out of it, particularly with a series finale title like The Reality War.
Yeah, I think there's something there. I was thinking, just thinking back to like other times the show is done on TV. There's loads more in the extended universe, but like on TV, like stand-ins for fans. And it's never been quite as directly meta as this week. But there's stuff in Greatest Show in the Galaxy with WizKid. And then I think also like Love and Monsters, like that whole group of people in Linda. There's a lot going on about stand-ins for fans with the Absorber off as well. But there's them as well that are kind of interested in the Doctor, looking for the Doctor. And for me, the three characters in Lux sort of fit in between in terms of how much I liked how they were done. The top for me is Love and Monsters and Elton Pope and everyone in Linda. Right? I think that's the most fun, interesting, engaging example of like building a whole episode around that concept of fans of the Doctor. But yeah, I thought it was all right. I've heard a lot about the outstaying the welcome thing, and I can sort of see that. The biggest thing for me was the music, and other people have said, and I completely agree, that it almost felt like parody, like how loud the music was getting at the end. And it was really nice music and calling back to some of the best themes from previous seasons, which makes a lot of sense, again, with like the whole meta nature of the scene. but it was so loud that it was like really sledgehammering home the message and the genuine emotion that they wanted to get across. And I thought, well, yeah, the mix could have just been taken down a little bit, or there could have just been like a little less music. But yeah, the scene itself worked for me. And I do agree with you that that end credits bit, and combined with episode titles and the things that Mrs. Flood is dropping, it all makes me think that there is something that we're going to come back to with the Land of Fiction or the God of Stories or something going on around reality, the walls of reality breaking down. I'm not sure exactly what, but something.
I'd be very surprised if it doesn't link to Mrs. Flood breaking the fourth wall and that kind of thing. And let's address this then. So obviously there's rumours, various news outlets and all this kind of thing about the show being cancelled. Doctor Who's been cancelled with, this is the last ever series, we're getting this and a spin-off and then that's it, done. And I've thought all along, this just sounds like something Russell T Davies is keeping fairly quiet about, sort of fueling ever so slightly just to get Doctor Who in the press. Like, it's free advertising, isn't it? You know, Doctor Who might be being cancelled. It's definitely, it's going to get newspapers talking about it. And if you sort of, you know, subscribe to the belief that somebody talking about you is a good thing regardless of what they're saying, then, you know, like, so I've thought about this all along. But now the series seems to directly be addressing the concept of its own cancellation, which makes me just think the whole thing is bobbins and it's all sort of very meta, handling the press, that kind of thing. And if that's the case, I really, really like it. And it does play into the whole concept of reality wars, Doctor Who fans meeting the Doctor in episode and Mrs. Flood breaking the fourth wall. It all seems to be sort of very, very linked. And if this is what's going on, it's very, very clever. You know, I do like the idea of let's drop rumours of Doctor Who being cancelled so that the Mirror and the Sun or whatever report it. And actually it's all just an in-universe, meta-y type storyline thing that's been going on anyway. Or maybe I'm just being really, really optimistic that Doctor Who is not being cancelled. I don't know.
It could be combination. Yeah. Like maybe Russell T Davies always knew that there would be a pause and that that's just how the deal would work in terms of recommissioning. And it's just making a virtue of that. And maybe it is still uncertain, but he's playing off of that and weaving it into the actual story of the show.
Yeah, it could be either. And like you said, you know, Doctor Who has done this sort of thing before, you know, Love and Monsters, and certainly the greatest show in the galaxy. I'll forever question the decision to have Wizkid wandering around going, oh, it's not as good as it used to be. But, like, yeah, that's a bit of an own goal, that is. But, yeah, it's obviously all leading to something, and I can't help but think that this sort of real-world press scare, and it is just a scare, at the end of the day, there's no actual conversation beyond, oh, well, we'll find out at the end of the series. And I'm actually starting to think that the series is going to end with Mrs. Flood confirming series 3 or something along those lines, you know. Oh, we'll be back at Christmas. It's already filmed. That sort of thing, you know. So it'll be very curious to see kind of what's going on. Maybe we won't get a series next year. Maybe that's what the War Between the Land and Sea is for. It's to kind of fill that gap. I don't know. It's all speculation at this point, but it's good speculation. And if the series itself is playing on the concept of fan speculation, then yeah, let's go with it. It's going to be a hell of a ride.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Yeah, either way, like you say, because like there are so many other shows that have done like an episode where you question whether where like the characters start to question whether the reality is the real world or not. Like Buffy and Deep Space Nine and like loads of other shows, I'm sure. But it's always been very self-contained. Like there's either a definitive answer at the end or a bit of uncertainty, but then you move on and the series gets back to normal. So I like the concept of Doctor Who like seeding this through and potentially picking it up at the end of a series. That was like the original, the series finale of Deep Space Nine. I think there was a concept of coming back to that idea that that Captain Sisko was actually a 1950s sci-fi author, and bringing that thread back in to have the final shot be him walking through the Paramount lot. And they didn't go with that in the end, but like I could see Doctor Who being brave or interesting enough to do something weird like that at the end of the series.
I say go down the Red Dwarf route and have it all be a video game.
But again, Red Dwarf has done that a couple of times with like Back to Earth, the video game one. But they've always walked it back like in a very definitive way of like it was the Dream Squid or it was a VR game. Again, I could see Doctor Who being the one where they're kind of brave enough to go, oh, it is just this, or just leave it on an ambiguous note at the end.
Yeah, let it stick for a little bit at least. Yeah, all very interesting, and I hope that it continues to be interesting. I hope there's no cop-out, and I hope there's no press this big red button and you're not a TV series anymore, which there's certainly a danger of. But it's going to be a hell of a journey, regardless. And I'm enjoying this series so far. I think that it's ticked a lot of boxes for me already that maybe the last one didn't. And I didn't not enjoy the last series. I just felt as though we were missing certain types of story, certain types of character, and I feel as though we've pretty much got a lot of that in the first 2 weeks of this series. So
it feels more confident as like the fact that we'll be getting into the arc in the first episode, that there's like a mission for getting Belinda home, that it just feels like it's got the confidence to start running with things, which again would be like a massive parallel to the classic series seasons 25 and 26. It's like just when that era was starting to find its voice and to tell some amazing stories, it was cancelled. So like worst case scenario, we could be looking at something similar where it ends, but it maybe ends on a high that's well regarded for decades afterwards.
Well, I've said it many times before, we would never have had Rose if we didn't have Survival. Despite there being the 16-year gap, like, Rose is absolutely a continuation of where Doctor Who started to go with Survival, like that type of story, that kind of domestic mystery setting type thing. And it's something that served Doctor Who incredibly well since.
Also the novels, but I think novels you could trace back to Survival as well, because they were picking up on the direction that but the importance of the companion was going in and the character of the Doctor. So yeah, I think you're right, Survival is, well, what was going on in series 25, 26 is like what set up the 2005 show, definitely.
Let's just hope that the reality war isn't this generation's Survival. We'll see. Well, that's probably a good point to leave it. We'll come back next week and we'll talk about the next episode, which, if certain rumours, alleged leaks, so on, would leave you to believe, will be really, really good. Like, by all accounts, we're on for a good one this week. So we'll be back to talk about that. Roll it on. But for now, thanks very much for joining me, Mansour. It's been good to talk about another episode.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll be back next week. Goodbye now.